Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:34 British Summer Time. Today is May 4th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. It's been really quite active. In stock markets, at the beginning of the week, the majority were really quite steady, but into the end of the week, we saw that a number were pulling back rather sharply. In Europe, the Euro Stoxx 50 was steady at the beginning of the week, rallied a little bit, but then gave up the entire advance and remains within this downtrend. The Nasdaq finished down on the day today by 2.25%. That is also an index that had rallied last week and gave up the entire advance this week. It remains about 150 points above its 200-day moving average, and at this stage is looking more likely than not that this reversionary process is going to continue. The Dow Jones hit a new recovery high this week, but failed to sustain it, was down 1.25% in here today. What we continue to see is that the U.S. markets have been a relative strength leader. They have been consolidating for much of the last month. They've held on to the vast majority of their gains. So far, their reversionary process has looked like a ranging consolidation, which has allowed the moving average to close the overextension. In such cases, it's not unheard of that in the latter stages of the reversionary process that it accelerates lower, and the latter part of the overextension is closed rather rapidly with a decline in prices. I suppose there is a certain degree of uncertainty in stock markets because there are a number of elections that are happening in the next few days in Europe, and people are nervous about that, and certainly Europe was quite weak in here today. The FTSE was down by almost 2%, the CAC was down by 1.9%, the DAX was down by a tad under 2%. The OMX in Sweden was down by 2.6%. The KFX in Denmark, which had pushed on to new highs, are broken out of this range yesterday. Is probably unlikely to be able to sustain that upward break in the current environment. Yesterday I pointed out a large number of shares that had already completed their mean reversions, and some were beginning to pull away from them. Now, the autonomy sector has been a relative strength leader for at least the last year, and my efforts in pointing out those that had completed their reversions was that they, within the rotation that we've been seeing over the last 6 weeks, that they were the most likely shares that were likely to break upwards. The autonomy sector has been behaving out of lockstep with the wider market. It will be interesting to see if they can continue to do that in this reversionary process that we have in so many stock markets. China's stocks this week were really quite impressive. Now, we have a higher reaction low for the A-share index, and a sustained move above 2600 would really suggest that the demand component is back in the driver's seat beyond the short term, that we were back into a medium-term cyclical bull. That would be really quite positive from a number of perspectives. The Hang Seng was weaker in here today, but it's been largely range-bound here in the region of 21,000. The China Enterprises Index, which is the H-share index, has been outperforming somewhat, and the Red Chip Index is outperforming even more. Red Chips are those companies that are at least 30% owned by various parts of the Chinese government. When we see that those types of shares are outperforming, and when we look at the spread between the Chinese 2-year and 10-year, it demonstrates probably better than anything else that we've been in a process over the last 2 years of tightening in China, and that is now starting to turn, which would suggest that we could be entering a period of easing monetary policy, and stock markets generally tend to respond rather well to easing of monetary policy. That was certainly the case in just about every other market over the last 3 and 4 years. The ASEAN region continues to be among the best performers, and we continue to see that a number of those markets have been hitting new highs. An increasing number are becoming somewhat overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages, and they are becoming susceptible to a pullback and consolidation. In the commodity complex, the CFTC interfered in the commodity futures markets yesterday and mandated that margins were going to have to be increased across the board for speculators, particularly on the CME. Today, the CME applied for and received a delay in having to implement that rule. They won't now have to do it until the beginning of August. But it introduces an element of uncertainty for some of these markets. They pulled back sharply yesterday. Gold today, having been as low as 1626, closed out the day at 1642, up on the day. Silver, having been as low as 29.78, was closing out the day at 30.37. So we're getting, there was a bit of a reversal intraday for a number of these commodities. But not for oil. Oil was down by over $4. At its lowest point, it was down by more than $5. Natural gas was relatively steady, down 5 cents. Now, when we... Everyone is aware that natural gas prices are remarkably low. And when one looks at the ratios of natural gas to oil or natural gas to coal, then it's becoming, it spent much of the last year becoming increasingly more competitive relative to those fuel sources. But those trends were broken 2 weeks ago. They've now experienced their largest reactions in, I think, since 2009. Those ratios have hit at least near-term peaks, potentially medium-term peaks. And natural gas prices are at very low levels in here. In absolute terms, natural gas will need to sustain a move above $2.50 to post a larger reaction within the downtrend, or a larger rally, and will subsequently need to find support at a progressively higher level to suggest that demand is returning at higher levels, and to begin to suggest that demand is beginning to regain dominance beyond the very short term. The industrial metal complex was quite firm in the beginning of the week. It weakened during the week and finished out the week pretty steady. The copper market is back to $3.71 on the COMEX contract. It really does need an upward dynamic to suggest that demand is returning to dominance in here and to defray potential for some additional weakness. Nickel was stronger in here at the end of the week, and so was zinc. So these industrial metals in particular haven't been doing much of anything for much of the last year. They're back into areas of potential support. And if we're right on the China call, then industrial metals should respond. And commodity producers should also benefit, and that should also filter through to some of the commodity producing countries. Government bonds are finishing out the week on a firm footing. German bunds are up to 142 points. Those are new highs. UK gilts are at 117. They were up over a half a point in here today. That's also a very firm market. We have an incredible amount of commonality in the government bond markets. US Treasuries were up almost a full point today. They're back up to 143. The peak in that market is about 147. German bunds are outperforming in no uncertain terms. They're breaking upwards to new highs. If they haven't hit a new low in terms of the yield, then they're certainly not that far off it, and they've been testing the lower side of this developing range for the last couple of weeks. The European problem is far from over. There's uncertainty as to what new governments are going to do when they are elected in Greece and particularly in France. And people are continuing to view the German debt markets as a safe haven. There isn't any real growth strategy, and in any debt crisis, attempting to fix it without either debt forgiveness or devaluation is really quite a challenge. So the European problem is going to rattle on for a while longer. The divergence in performance between European banks and US banks is quite marked. European banks continue to trend lower. They spent much of the week coming down, and the European banking sector is back on its lows once more. The US banks are at the upper side of their range, and until this week were looking as if they were capable of breaking upwards. Now, that's probably unlikely in when one considers that the wider market is in a period of consolidation and that S&P 500 banks index has been pulling back from the upper side of its range in here this week. In the currency markets, the Indian rupee in particular has been weak against the US dollar. It's almost back to its lows. That has taken some of the confidence out of the stock market, and the Indian the Nifty 50 broke downwards from it's been posting a progression of lower rally highs for the last couple of months, but has held in the region of the 200-day moving average, and it broke lower in here today. Now, there's a number of issues at present with India. People are increasingly becoming ambivalent about the government's ability to manage the demands of the economy. India persistently runs budget deficits and relies on foreign direct investment and remittances to make up the difference. In the last couple of months, the government has introduced an element of uncertainty with regard to how foreign investors are going to be taxed, and that is hampering their ability to attract even greater amounts of foreign direct investment. The first quarter of the year was very impressive indeed in terms of the government's ability to attract inward investment, but that's reversed somewhat in the last month. Corruption remains an abiding issue in India. I had a conversation with someone who related a conversation that he'd had with some key decision makers for companies that were investing and building factories out in Asia. And they had become so disillusioned with the graft in India that they had decided to pull back and were not going to go back to India until things had improved considerably. And it's one thing to complain of corruption. I think any of us, wherever we live, can complain of corruption in one way, shape, or form in any country. But when that corruption is getting in the way of economic growth, is curtailing infrastructure development, and is getting in the way of the foreign direct investment that the country requires for survival, then it really does turn into a problem. So things need to change in India, and the government needs to be able to demonstrate that it has improving standards of governance. We've long said that governance is everything in markets, not just in emerging markets. And from a governance perspective, it doesn't matter from where we start, but what we do need to be able to say is that the standards of governance are improving. And in India at present, that's not something we can say. If anything, they're getting a bit worse. And that is being reflected in the stock market. Now, China's market is beginning to say the opposite. You've had this grinding decline over the last 2 years. Monetary policy has been tightened. That's looking like it's being reversed. China crossed an important Rubicon in the last couple of years. It moved from a position where for every dollar invested, the net benefit from investing in its people or its human capital is now outweighs that of investing in infrastructure. That's leading to a change of focus among the Chinese policymakers. It's only over the last couple of years that they've really started to focus on social issues such as housing, the environment, healthcare, social security, and they've massively increased the infrastructure development, not so much in transport, but in sewage works and in really improving the lot of the people in the hinterland and in the countryside. Now, there are a number of reasons for that, but one of the main benefits of pumping more money into healthcare and social security is that it frees up additional cash for the consumer to get out there and help support the domestic economy. And there's no mistake that the better performing sectors in the Chinese economy are those consumer-led sectors. The US dollar this week was a bit stronger against the euro. We have this uncertainty about the elections. It will be interesting to see if what we're seeing right now is not something like sell the rumor and buy the news with regard to the euro, because the euro has been falling for the last few days. We'll have some degree of certainty about the French election when we get into next week, and then there is the potential that the euro could rally depending on what the results are going to be. When you look at a number of various cross rates, for example, you look at the euro and the pound, and the pound is back to an area of potential resistance. It's back to the highest level it's been at in almost the last 3 years, which represents the upper side of its base against the euro. The UK certainly doesn't want a strong currency, and particularly not against the euro. The euro has weakened really quite considerably. It's a little bit overbought in the short term. So when we do have a greater sense of clarity about some of what's going to happen on the political front, then there is the potential that we're going to see a bit of a rally in the euro, at least to unwind the short-term overbought condition. Longer term, comparing the performance of the euro with the pound with the dollar, then every one of those countries has got a vested interest in a weaker currency. When we look at those long-term charts, we see the relationships between those various currencies, then the pound probably got its devaluation in first, so it has the better base formation characteristics relative to the euro and the dollar. When you compare the euro with the dollar, those are two of neither of those currency regions represents a strong currency. When we compare their performance to currencies in Asia in particular, then we get a very different story indeed. That's where there are real trends in evidence. And most of those trends are towards a secular strengthening, particularly in currencies like the Singapore dollar. Now, they have also returned to a potential area of resistance for the strength of those respective currencies. There is the potential that the dollar is going to get a bit stronger in here, particularly because we've seen short-term overbought conditions develop in some of those stock markets, and that would suggest that if we do move into a reversionary process, that there'll be a flight out of those currencies and back into dollars. When we look at the very long term, we remain within this secular bull market in terms of humanity. The per capita consumption of just about everything continues to increase. That's driving bull markets in just about everything that can be consumed. The autonomy sector is remarkably varied. It represents the companies that have outgrown their domestic markets. That these are the companies that have global reach, superior corporate governance, strong cash flows, brand recognition, and the ability to operate and manufacture wherever they choose. The closest historical comparison would be to the Italian principalities during the Renaissance, the principality like Venice that had a global trade network, at least to the extent of the globe that it was able to reach, and a place and an influence in the European economy that was considerably beyond its comparative size. That's what we're seeing with a number of these autonomies. We're also seeing a rotation in the autonomies. Just because they represent a major bull theme does not mean they're immune to occasionally becoming overextended relative to a trend mean, such as the 200-day moving average, and moving into then reversionary processes. The technology sector in particular had become really quite overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages and are now in a process of mean reversion. If they continue to find support in the region of their 200-day moving averages, then we can continue to characterize them as being inconsistent trends. So what we're looking for is these shares to pull back, find support within the region of their 200-day moving averages, and begin to rally once more. That demonstrates to us that the medium-term pattern of supply and demand coming back into dominance at progressively higher levels remains intact. When that starts to change, when they fail to find support in the region of their 200-day moving averages, when they experience larger declines, break progressions of higher reaction lows, then that tells us that, at least for the moment, the supply component has returned to dominance and the risk factor has increased rather considerably. These are incredibly interesting times, particularly in the energy complex. We were bulls of oil for much of the last decade, and we've changed our minds over the last 3 years. We do not anticipate that oil prices are going to hit the bullish forecasts that have been put forward previously by others. High prices encourage substitution, and that substitution is increasingly happening with natural gas. Now, natural gas at today's prices is unsustainably low, but given the potential for additional supply growth, not just in the USA, but also in other countries, Australia, for example, anticipates being the largest LNG exporter by 2017. It means that we're probably heading towards an internationally traded or a globally representative price for natural gas, that it's likely to become the most important energy commodity over the next 20 years. If we use more natural gas, we can then use less oil, and the price of oil can then start to come down. And we would anticipate that that would start to really become meaningful at some point within the next decade. we've defined what's been happening on Wall Street over the last decade as a secular process of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. A large number of the autonomies represent that pattern of contracting valuations, but they're also outperforming the wider market, such as the S&P, and they're completing these 10-year ranges one by one and breaking upwards to new high ground. If we look at very long-term charts, the Dow Jones had a glass ceiling between 1965 and about 1980 at about 1,000. That was another secular valuation contraction. But then it completed that and moved into a 20-year bull market. We've had 12 years of ranging activity on the S&P 500. It's a very similar process of valuation contraction, rising dividend yields, and it's likely to be completed at some point within the next decade. That would suggest that the S&P will then embark on another secular valuation expansion, where we get rising prices over a secular time horizon. And for the people that are currently experiencing unemployment or a lower standard of living, that's pretty consistent with the process of valuation contraction and deleveraging. So that's definitely an important factor over the coming years. I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.